Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Etta.
What's my name
Alfred
again?
Etta. You know who you are, don't you?
Let me look at that.
Alfred Addis to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. I think maybe my coffee that I had this afternoon is just beginning to hit home, yes. But today's Tuesday, July 11th, 2017. Did I get that right, Al?
I think so.
All right. Well, there's a lot of things to talk about today and a lot of the same old things to talk about today. And it's just, you know what, folks? It's just distractions. And we'll talk about some of those distractions. But first, we have gold 12 in the aftermarket, New York spot 12.1690, up 180. Silver's up 17 cents. Better get it before it goes over 16, folks. $15.92, up 17. Platinum is up $2 today at 906. Palladium had a big day, up 11 at $857. Didn't follow the... You know, it's interesting because the dollar was stronger today. That's the last time I looked at the index. It sort of must have reversed itself quite interestingly. Down 0.31 at 95.74. And as I said, it was a stronger dollar earlier this morning. So kind of interesting. Crude oil was up 71 cents at 45.11. And I didn't have the opportunity to follow the paper markets today. I saw they were up, and I didn't want to follow it anymore. But it's struggling. The Dow was up 144 at 21,409. The NASDAQ was up 16.92 at 61.93. The S&P was down almost 2 points at 24.25. I see a headline here that says Trump Jr. emails trigger knee-jerk drop in stock market. I don't know what his emails would have to do with the stock market. If anyone is following that story, and we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. 10-year yield 2.36%, down 0.01, and the euro, of course, was a little bit stronger than what the dollar fell, up 0.59 at 115. European markets were down slightly overnight. So, but this is from CNN Money. It says with the Donald Trump Jr. moves the markets within a half hour after President Trump's eldest son released an email chain on his meeting with the Russian government attorney, the Dow dropped about 150 points. So it did come back. The knee-jerk reaction was noticeable but modest, which is interesting because it just shows you if anything changes, how quickly these markets are going to reverse themselves. But, it's certainly, nothing to get freaked out about. It's, a big deal, 150 points when you're, up at, 21,000. But it's interesting to see after he released that how quick of a knee-jerk reaction there was. The junior's email release at the very best got the markets concerned that the policy agenda might get pushed out a bit. Shortly thereafter, I'm not sure which came first, but we also have, at the same time, and this could be in relationship to that, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, will keep the Senate in session for first two weeks of August to perhaps complete the repealing of Obamacare and raising the debt limit. So they're going to work an extra 2 weeks in August. They usually go home the 1st of August for their holiday, summer holiday, so wonders never cease. But I think this time I kind of prefer that they go home. I don't want them to do any changes anymore. I mean, because I don't know what they're doing. If they're just going to pass something to get it passed, then they really don't care what's in it. Oh, let's just pass it just so we can say, yay, we can clap and say, we got something passed. I mean, it's just insane. It's just crazy. But he made the announcement today during a party luncheon. And in a statement soon after, the majority leader said he wants to take up an annual defense authorization measure and address a backlog of nominations that have been mindlessly stalled by Democrats. You know,
nominations so for what? Federal courts or what?
No, there's
positions on the bureaucracy.
There's quite a few administration openings that Mr. Trump hasn't filled yet, and they can get those done. Supposedly, the Democrats are, you know, stalling these nominations.
As far as I'm concerned, they can stall them for the next 20
years. Yeah, I mean, we don't. Yeah, who knows?
But who's complaining?
Who's complaining?
All right.
You know, but then again, got to keep people working so our employment numbers don't reverse themselves. Let's see. So they're going to be working an extra couple days. But you know, it was interesting that the Senator Dan Sullivan of Alaska, he said at a news conference today with other GOP senators pushing to curtail the recess, he says, if we're working 3 days a week, which is what we do, we're not going to get it done. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, instead of extending and just work 5 days, you know, why don't you work 5-6 days? Like real people at a job. I mean, what job do you get to work only 3 days a week?
You'll be surprised, Melody.
Well, I'm not surprised.
It's going to be all that way. It's going to be like Greece before this is all over.
Oh, good Lord.
People count themselves lucky if they've got a half day. Hey, I've got a job for 4 hours a week. Yay.
Yeah, they probably have 3-hour lunches. They probably have, you know, anyway, we all know that it isn't anything new.
Well, you know what else is, you know, there's been a considerable amount of time expended while people are talking about repealing Obamacare. And in the event that it can be done in two weeks that consist of 3 days a week, that means 6 days is all it takes to get this done. If it could be done, I don't know that it will. But if that's all, why didn't they just put in a little more time in the last month or 2 months or 3 months or whatever, and they could have gone home on their vacation?
I guess.
Mean, it's just one of those things. It's just, oh, my God. These
I know.
People.
When I go on vacation, it's been a while since I've been on vacation, but when I go on vacation, I work, you know, 15-hour days to get all caught up, get everything done. So when I go, you know, it's what you normally do. You're right. Why don't they do that?
I know.
But the market we were talking about today, Donald Trump Jr., he released a stunning chain of emails detailing his conversations about setting up a campaign meeting with a Russian lawyer who had offered compromising information on Hillary Clinton. The information would incriminate Hillary and her dealings with Russia. It would be very useful to your father, reads one of the emails from Rob Goldstone.
That's a Russian name.
Yeah. Who acted as an intermediary to set up the meeting. This is obviously very high level and sensitive information, but is part of Russia and its government's support for Mr. Trump, wrote Goldstone. In one of the emails released on Twitter referring to the information on Clinton, Trump Jr. told Goldstone, "If it's what you say, I love it." In another email, Goldstone suggested the information about Clinton could be given to then-candidate Donald Trump through Rona Graff, his longtime assistant. I can also send this information to your father via Rona, but it is ultra-sensitive, so I wanted to send it to you first, Goldstone wrote. So this is all relationship to the meeting that Mr. Trump Jr. had with an attorney. I think it was after Mr. Trump had secured the Republican nomination.
Yeah, it might be after the nomination, but it's before the election.
It was before the meeting took place on June 9th. And also you had
last year of
2016, and you had Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner and his then campaign chairman Paul Manafort. They also attended the meeting. Trump Jr. has said the Russian lawyer Natalia Veselnitskaya did not have the promised opposition research and instead arranged the meeting to press for changes on U.S. policy that restricts adoptions of Russian children. So, Trump Jr. has hired his own attorney to handle matters related to the investigation. It is interesting that they did release the emails. I can see in one point it's like, here, this is all it was. You know, it's no big deal. I'm assuming he was given advice by his attorney to do this.
Well, there's no problem. I don't think there's any. I don't think there's anything illegal about having foreign sources that are trying to support one candidate or the other. The situation with Russia was whether or not they tried to somehow affect the election by jimmying the election, the computers used to calculate who's winning and losing. Russia wants to say, sure, we're in favor of Trump rather than Hillary. Yeah, why not? Hillary's made it fairly clear that she was in favor of going to, she had no objection to war with Russia. Trump didn't seem to be eager for war with Russia. Russia would have a natural inclination to say, well, we would rather have Trump. That's quite all right. The question is, did they meddle in the election process? And so far, there's been no evidence to, so there's been no evidence I'm aware of to say that they did.
I think the problem is when, you know, these folks were asked about meetings with various people, various Russians, they all deny it.
And then who are they?
Well, you had Flynn. I believe this meeting.
Did they ask his son?
I mean, you know, the Kushner. Kushner would have been asked because he has to get security clearance, so he should have said that. You know, so they omit information.
I'm not absolutely.
But if there isn't anything, but if there isn't anything wrong, like they're admitting it now, then just admit it, and we wouldn't be having these stupid discussions now. So I don't, you know.
Well, you got to have these stuff for slow news days, Melody.
You know, so I mean,
make the market jump up 100 points or down 100.
I'm not saying that this is evidence of collusion or anything like that. I'm just saying, good grief.
Well, here's the thing. Now, when you talk about
tell the truth, what's wrong with the truth?
Maybe they did.
Good.
Maybe they did when they. I don't know what the law is on meeting with agents of the Russian government. All right, but if you bump into them at some restaurant, sit down and have dinner at the same table, I don't think you need permission from the government to do it. You would need to be within the law if you were going to discuss things that concern national policy. I don't know that you have to, that you need a special permit from government or legal authority from the government to sit down and talk with the Russians if you're talking about politics. All right, two different things. National, yeah. Maybe need by law, got to have some sort of approval. But if it's not about the government, it's not about national affairs, maybe just sitting down and say, gee, I'd like to see your dad win rather than Hillary. Maybe you don't need special law to cover that. And if that's the case, and if someone asked Donald Trump Jr., did you meet with these guys for this purpose, discussing government affairs, he could say, no, I didn't. Did you meet him for political affairs? Yes, I did. Now, I don't know that that happened, but it's the way the world works sometimes. It's all a word game.
It is.
And if you're adept at the language, you can deal with these people, and if you're not, you're going to go bye-bye. You know, I've told people for a long time, we get all upset and anxious about government having guns and clubs and tasers and whatever else, and we are intimidated by government's capacity to exert physical force. Right? But the truth of the matter is we are ensnared by words. We are not ensnared by guns and clubs. They're there, you can see them, it sometimes happens, but the real problem is the language. And if you want to stay away from the government, if you want to keep the government at bay, the first thing you need to do is learn English. Right? It must be your first language and not a casual language. You have to become fluent in the language if you are going to hold the government at bay. Now, if you can do that, you have much less to worry about. There is no perfect solution to the kind of trouble we could have with government. But if you can master the language, okay. If you can't, you are vulnerable, vulnerable, vulnerable.
Of course, because they got all the attorneys in the world, and that's who you're coming up against. You go one on one on any of these politicians, and it's an equal. But they have all the legalese, and you know, and that's
a lot of them do. A lot of them do.
They
a lot
have
of them
to stand just behind an attorney because they're just like you and me, and they're not any better. They're not very few or any smarter. They just have all the legalese behind them that makes them.
It isn't so much that they have it behind them. The problem is the average American doesn't really understand the language, and they have no legalese, almost whatever, to support them. It's not that the politicians are 10 foot tall. It's that the average American, figuratively speaking, is 4 foot tall. He's easy to kick around if you can speak. And the attorneys know how to speak, and the average American knows that he's ignorant and outgunned, and so he shuts up. But
you know,
and it's not an easy thing. It's a lot harder to learn the language than it is to learn how to load and aim a rifle. Right? But if you really want to be free, that's where you got to go. You've got to get into the words. You've got to get into the language. You keep that rifle around. It has use. It may have value and the rest of that, but first order of business. You know, I've told people for years, you should have at least as many dictionaries as you have weapons, firearms. Right? You got three rifles? Fine. You need three dictionaries. You should make it your business. And I you know, I've got right now on computer, I've probably got a dozen or 20 of them. But you really need to get into the language if you're going to deal with these situations.
You know, Al, I remember, oh, many, many years ago, probably 40 years ago. And it was April 14th. And I saw a family member running down to the post office. I guess it was April 15th, running down to the post office, you know, after working, you know, probably 10, 12, 13 hours that day. And they keep the post office open late at night on April 15th so everybody can pay their taxes and so forth. And they ran in there just to make sure that the postmark was on that envelope to make sure that they met the deadline.
Yep.
And from that day on, I swore I would never allow any government to intimidate me and place that much fear into the people. And I mean, I do believe in, yes, we have to have a government. Yes, we have to, you know, follow the laws. I mean, and so forth and whatnot. You know, it's the freedom what we choose to do. That's the freedom that we have. We can choose what to do. We can make choices. But that from that moment on, yes, I cross my I's, I dot my T's. It's the only way I can run a business and so forth. But that doesn't mean I can't disagree, you know, with a lot of the things that go on. And yeah, it's really sad that there is that fear. And of course, that was, you know, 40 years ago, it was a different time too than
and
what we have
worse.
Today.
No, it's worse. What
I don't
you
think
saw
there
was
is a time.
Kind of an aberration.
I don't think it's different because that person was an older person. Yeah. And, you know, it was from the days gone by where, you know, you paid all your bills. You didn't file bankruptcy. It was a different era than what we have today. You know, everything is just do it if it feels good.
Like running commercials. Apparently it felt good to Todd to run the commercials,
yeah.
So here we are.
Right.
Melody and I will return in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk truthandtalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, what's next, Melody?
Well, there was 16 service members killed in a U.S. military plane crash today. U.S. officials were investigating today the cause of a military transport plane crash that killed 16 service members, leaving a five-mile trail of wreckage in rural northern Mississippi.
You know what that means? It blew up in the air.
Well, there are witnesses that did say that perhaps a farmer heard a big boom and saw the plane fall. But the KC-130 Hercules aircraft disappeared from air traffic control radar over Mississippi after taking off from Cherry Point, North Carolina. It plunged into a field at approximately 4 p.m. That's 5 p.m. Eastern time on Monday, yesterday. 15 Marines and one Navy sailor were on board. Of course, the names of the deceased were being withheld until the family members were notified. Not a lot of details of the crash was released. Of course, they're doing a thorough investigation, and it was en route to a Navy facility in El Centro, California, transporting equipment and people. Equipment on board included small arms, ammunition, and personal weapons. I believe there's already a lot of various stories floating around.
Plenty of speculation.
Yes, floating around about this. And these things just don't crash.
No. I mean, I can understand that something might catch on fire. It's not just that it doesn't crash. That's not the issue. The issue, if the plane comes down and it crashes into the ground, it doesn't leave a trail 5 miles long. Mm-hmm. It leaves a trail 5 miles long because it exploded. There was a bomb. There was some sort of an explosion at altitude. And because of that, the debris is scattered over a 5 mile stretch. At least that's the way I look at it. I'm not an expert on this sort of thing. But 5 miles, that tells me this thing went off, a bomb went off, and this thing fell apart or started to disintegrate at, who knows, 10,000 foot altitude or whatever. I don't know. And the main wreckage came in some farmer's field. But there was a bomb or some sort of an explosive, some sort of an explosion. We can't say it was a bomb, but very strange, because I can understand how an airplane might catch fire. You got a leak, something happens, the fuel catches on fire, you got an engine on fire, you got a wing on fire. I get that. But the plane still comes down intact, and it hits the ground, and bang, all right, falls apart at that point. 5 miles, that means something exploded at altitude, or at least that's what it means to me. And if that's true, this is going to be a very interesting investigation. I mean, it'll be, what made that happen? Pretty strange.
Well, it's the same thing, and again, same thing with the 9/11 crash in Pennsylvania. At that point in time, I had several clients. They actually had to put in a road. They had to hardtop a road going to the site for the president, because it was just out in the middle of nowhere that they built the
blacktop, put a road in.
They had to put a road in and so forth, and a lot of them were there helping cleaning up, and I was told that there was items for miles around.
Yeah, I know.
Miles around.
Yeah, it just blew up in the air.
Yeah, it just wasn't hearsay. I had people who actually were there cleaning up and putting in the hard top. So there was a blacktop for the president to drive in. So, but anyway, kind of interesting. We'll have to follow that and, you know, see if anything comes out or that's just brushed up under the rug. You know, I've been trying to find things about Mr. Trump's administration, positive things. We have talked about some positive things. This one I don't agree with. U.S. President Donald Trump is planning to nominate former Treasury official Randall Quarles to be the Federal Reserve's top banking regulator. Now, on the top, I think it sounds like, yeah, there's someone in there that's going to be looking over the Federal Reserve's shoulder, maybe. If confirmed by the Senate, Quarles would be the first vice chair of supervision at the Fed. This was a role that was created after the 2008 financial crisis, but it was never filled during the Obama administration. Quarles is viewed as an industry-friendly figure who will likely listen to banks that have complained about the impact of regulations implemented since the financial meltdown. And this has been floating around since April, so this is, I guess this is just now official. Former Fed Governor Daniel Tarullo effectively ran banking supervision until he stepped down in February. Let's go on to Quarles. Quarles currently runs a private investment firm that he founded, the Cynosure Group from Salt Lake City. He was previously a partner at private equity firm the Carlyle Group. Now, we all know that the Carlyle Group is one of the elite groups. So he is an elite. He was also
associated with Bush.
He was let me finish. He was also under the Secretary for Domestic Finance at the Treasury under Bush, and was the U.S. Executive Director at the IMF. So to me, he's just another elite that's coming in, you know, to help loosen, you know, the Wall Streets, the Wall Street banks. And they're just going to deregulate and continue business as usual. It'll benefit them for a while.
Yeah, for a while, but this whole thing is going to blow up sooner or later. Mm-hmm. And when it does, I don't think there's going to be a bailout for the Wall Street banks this time around. I don't think there's going to be a bailout. I think they're in deep trouble. And and deregulation will almost certainly allow them to play the fool.
Yep.
Right? It'll happen out. There will be people in positions of power who will say, look, we could make $1 billion this afternoon. All we got to do is pull a fast one. They'll pull the fast one, and they might get away with it. And tomorrow they get away with it again, and the day after that they get away with it again. But sooner or later you deregulate these people, and my reading, their greed will draw them into something so stupid that there'll be bankers jumping off the top of tall buildings. So we'll watch and see. I don't know. What can you say? It's, you know,
it's just more of the same.
I know.
It really
know.
Is. It's just
fools
more.
These mortals be. Mm-hmm. You know, you would think that people would learn something. And we would learn, and even the bankers would learn, that it maybe is for their own good that they enjoy, that they endure a certain amount of regulation. And I'm a free market advocate. I'm not generally in favor of more regulation. In the case of banks, I'd say, yeah, it's probably a good idea.
Yep.
You get all that money up there, and everybody gets greedy to the point of stupidity, and next thing you know, the whole country can fold up while the bankers are getting rich.
Well, the bankers have a couple of hundred or more than, I mean, they have a long history, a very long history of screwing things up.
So does government.
Bankers control the government, all right?
And
bankers control the government. Bankers
allow.
How do
the people control?
You know, so.
How do the people control? By insisting that they obey the Constitution, particularly in the Constitution is the people's law. It's not the government's law. It's the people's law that says, okay, we're going to let you guys, we're going to trust you with the powers of government, but here are limits. This is, you got to do this only within these limits. It says, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, to ordain, establish this Constitution. It is the people's law. What did the people say, among other things? They said at Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. And as long as we had gold or silver coin, it created a restriction on government and banking. where neither one of them could stray too far in violation of the law because they had to have enough gold and silver to back them up. And the gold and silver was ultimately produced by the sweat and by the labor of ordinary men and women. And they couldn't run up this incredible national debt and this incredible global debt as long as the money system was the people's money, which is gold and silver. But we let them go. They said, oh, we're smart. It's an emergency. It's only temporary. We let them get rid of our gold and silver coin. And they have abused that, the resulting fiat currency. They've used it. They've abused it. It's the fundamental reason government has grown so huge. Because all they got to do is write a check, and nobody ever cashes the check. Nobody ever redeems the check. They just write it, and they hand you a check, and then you hand it to somebody else, they hand it to somebody else. But the government never has to redeem its debts, and they certainly don't have to redeem it with gold and silver. And as long as that's the case, they can just, like me having a stack of checks, I can keep writing checks for $100, $1,000, a million, a billion, a trillion. Doesn't matter. Nobody's cashing my check. I don't have to redeem it. This is how government grew. This is how banking became the problem that it is today. We let them get away from the reality that's imposed by gold and silver money. And you either got it or you don't have it. Right? Piece of paper, it doesn't count. You got the money, good. You don't have the money, you're bankrupt. Go away. You're dead. You're done. Right? You're out of business. You're bankrupt. It imposed a level of reality that the government hasn't had to deal with throughout most of my life. But the day is coming where they have gone so far afield, they have taken such enormous advantage over being able to just sign their names to a check and everybody thinks it's good. They grew and they grew and they grew and they grew and they grew. And now they're going to come to a point where, they can't keep signing those checks. And sooner or later, when that happens, this whole system is going to just house of cards time and everything's going to go bye-bye and everybody going to be pointing a finger, but I doubt that many people will point to what I believe is the correct villain, and that is both political parties who allowed the loss of gold and silver coin, and they allowed it in violation of the Constitution to this day. We haven't had gold or silver coin in circulation since 1971. How many Republicans have complained? How many Democrats have complained? How many presidents have complained? The foundation of their power is being able to issue a fiat currency. You want freedom? You want limited government? You want gold and silver for a national currency. Don't want freedom? Don't want limited government? Okay, let them play. Let them have fiat currency. It really is just so stupid. You know, we let these people get away with murder and then we complain. We complain when somebody gets killed. You know? All you had to do was enforce the law. And we didn't do it.
So. Here's something interesting. Then I don't know why, beam me up, Scotty. Scientists teleport photon from Earth to orbit for the first time.
How do they know?
I know. It's been 20 years since quantum scientists successfully teleported a photon over 10 miles, proving that quantum entanglement, a process that Albert Einstein called spooky action at a distance, was possible. In 2010, a team at the University of Science and Technology of China, you're going to believe them, in Shanghai set a record by teleporting photons over 60 miles on Earth. And now, just 7 years later, they've outdone themselves, teleporting from a ground station in Tibet 2.5 miles above sea level to a satellite orbiting Earth more than 310 miles away. It's the first time an object has been teleported from our planet into space.
An object, a photon?
Mm-hmm.
A photon is one small part of an atom.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to know is, did somebody sign their name on the photon, or they give it a unique number so we know, this is the one that this has got the same, this is the one they sent. How do you know? Oh, listen, Melanie, listen, they got, how far are we? You and I are 1,000, 1,500 miles away. I'm sending a photon to you today over the over the Skype line. Yeah. Get my name in the record books. We've just sent a photon. Look for the one that's got my name on it. Actually, just my initials because they're little, they're kind of small, so I only have AA on them.
Will I need a magnifying glass?
We may get the prize, Melody. We could do it.
I know. It's just kind of like, really? You know, yesterday we were talking about fake news on mainstream media. Well, okay. I'm done. I just thought that was kind of...
That's interesting. They're sending I'm curious. I'm curious, how much did they tell you how much it cost to send this photon? Because I've got a flashlight. I can send you a bunch of photons with my flashlight. Probably only cost a nickel to send some photons from here up into outer space. Got a good flashlight. You know, what's it? I don't know. Here's something.
Anyway, I thought that would tickle you, and I was I was right.
2 years after, here's something from USA Today, and the headline is 2 years after the bailout, life in Greece has gotten more miserable. Now, what have I been saying ever since this problem with Greece cropped up? To heck with the bailouts, file for bankruptcy, and start to rebuild your country. All right? Just say, sorry, we can't pay the debt. Write it off. That's what should have been done. But all through this, and even when Tsipras, and I don't remember who his Secretary of the Treasury was, but he was a rock star for a while, when they were elected in office, they admitted Greece is bankrupt. They admitted it. We're bankrupt. We need to file for bankruptcy. But they were persuaded. They were conned. They were bribed. I don't know what happened. At least Tsipras was the Secretary of Treasury. He's gone. But Tsipras, he went along with the program and said, "No, we don't need to file for bankruptcy. We can fight our way through this." Bunk, bunk, bunk. So here we are, 2 years after the bailout. This is where people give you money in order to supposedly save you from bankruptcy, okay? But they'd say their lives are even more miserable than they were before. 2 years after an international bailout that was supposed to lead to an economic revival, conditions here have only worsened, and life for Greeks has become one of constant misery. Now, the reason this story is interesting and important is because pay attention. This is what's going to happen here. And when the stuff hits the fan in this country, there's going to be some people who are promising some bailouts and some easy fixes, and we need to keep on paying on the debt and the rest of that, and the solution will be bankruptcy. Nobody's going to want to talk about it, but that will be the solution that we need. We're going to take a break for a couple more commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment, talk a little more about Greece getting more miserable. Please stay tuned to Financial Smart. Tell me again. Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every heart is
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, and we're back for the last segment of Financial Survival. We're talking about Greece and how it's just getting deeper and deeper. And according to this report, the problems are getting deeper. The Greeks are worse off than they were a couple of years ago. And the economy says the economy is stagnant, unemployment hovers around 25%, and is twice as high for young adults. Taxes are rising and wages are falling. Now, watch and see. Pay attention. You can expect something like this in your future and mine. Okay? Half of Greek homeowners can't make their mortgage payments, and another quarter can't afford their property taxes. All these years, there's one of the ordinary people, speaking, and he says, all these years I've heard dozens of promises from current and previous governments on creating new jobs and bettering conditions in the country, but I never believed anything of what I heard. This is from Nikos Theodoridos, 57, who became homeless after the economic crisis began in 2007. Homelessness and the crisis are still here, despite all the politicians are saying. And here's where it really gets interesting, but a certain amount of irony. On July 5th of 2015, a little over 2 years ago, voters soundly rejected the terms of a proposed bailout with international lenders because the plan demanded too much austerity. Voters said, no, we don't want it. Yet, Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras and his left-wing Syriza party ignored the referendum results and signed a third bailout deal, which would provide nearly $100 billion in loans to the country. It was desperately needed to avoid collapse, or at least it was needed to avoid filing for bankruptcy. If they filed for bankruptcy, canceling their debts, which I think is the real reason they won't let them file for bankruptcy. I think the problem, you know, pure theory on my part, could be wrong, but the way I see it is that the government issues debt instruments, bonds, that by law can be used as collateral for banks, which under fractional reserve banking can lend in this country up to 9 times the face value of whatever collateral they have in the vault. If they buy a bond for $1 million, as I understand it, stand to be corrected, but as I understand it, if the bank buys a bond for $1 million, they get to lend $9 million out to the public. And if they only get 5% interest on those $9 million, that still translates into a 45% return on investment on the original $1 million. They only paid $1 million. They're lending $9 million they don't have. Right? The government is essentially saying, look, if you'll give us $1 million for this worthless piece of paper, we'll let you lend $9 million to the public and charge them each 5% on each of those $9 million loans. And the net result is you make 45% on the $1 million that you paid us. And I think this is the fundamental reason. I could be wrong, but this is the way it looks to me. This is the reason why the banks go along with this problem or along with this program, because they can get rich off of it.
Absolutely.
Right? And besides that, if they lend money based on government bonds, if they do lend, I've heard that in Europe they can go as high as 23-1 on fractional reserve banking. Now, if I'm understanding this correctly, and they can lend out 23 euros for every 1 euro they've got in government bonds, And that's in some countries. Some countries wouldn't be that high. That's the top level. And I don't know which country where that is true or if it's still true. I heard it was back a couple of years ago. Whether it's still true, I don't know. But the point is, I think that if we cancel the debt, if the people of Greece, for example, file for bankruptcy, they wind up canceling the national debt. That debt is used in bank vaults throughout Europe to as collateral to justify multiples of the size of that debt. Again, if they've got €1 million in Greek bonds in Greek banks or in banks of France or Switzerland or any place else, and they've used them as collateral to make loans to the public, I suspect that if the Greeks say, that's it, we quit, we're bankrupt, we're not going to pay those bills, that means the banks, I think, have to grab, if they had put $1 million in Greek bonds in the bank, they have to put, and they loaned $9 million to their people based on that collateral, if they have to admit that Greek bond is worth nothing, and they would if they filed for bankruptcy, then I think they have to call $9 million in out of the economy. I think this is the reason why they're saying, no, you can't file bankruptcy, you can't file, you can't cancel the debt. Thanks to fractional reserve banking, that debt is the collateral for millions and billions and maybe trillions of dollars. Yeah, probably is trillions of dollars in the economy. Now, again, I stand to be corrected always, but I think this is what's going on, and that's why they wouldn't let them file for bankruptcy. The people voted 2 years ago. They said, we don't want a bailout. Somebody's trying to give the Greeks some free money, essentially, and they're saying, we don't want free money. We don't want it. Well, it wasn't quite free because there were more demands placed on them for austerity, but just the same, it's evidence that the Greek people were getting smart, and they're saying, we're not going to take the bait. We understand that this seemingly free money or easy money has been the means of our downfall, the mechanism by which we have been destroyed. And we don't want any more easy money. We just want to, and they didn't say it necessarily at this referendum, but ultimately, if they had simply filed for bankruptcy, it would have been difficult, would have been painful, especially for the first year or two, but they'd have got through it. And then they could start rebuilding their country. And here they are. This problem in Greece has been going on for a decade, maybe more. I'm not sure how long it's been. But this isn't just 2 years. It's 2 years since the last bailout. It's been going on for 10 years, and it gets worse and worse, and it'll keep getting worse until they file for bankruptcy. Let's see. They ignored it. Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras and his left-wing Syriza party ignored the referendum of results and signed the third bailout that would provide nearly $100 billion in loans that the country desperately needed to avoid collapse. Again, I don't think they needed the loans to avoid collapse. They were collapsing because of debt. You cancel the debt. You don't go deeper into debt. Tsipras, that's prime minister, whose party gained power on a pledge to resist further austerity requirements. And austerity means higher taxes and lower wages, lower benefits, reduced government benefits and higher taxes. That's what the austerity means. He reversed himself and adopted more budget and pension cuts. All right? In June, he negotiated the latest payout of $9.7 billion. Many Greeks are now resigned to living in poverty under the deal. Do you hear how sad, how tragic that is? Now, I don't doubt that the Greeks have played the fool on this, and they have earned a certain amount of comeuppance. All right? We all have. We same is true for here in the United States. But here we have a people that are so beat down that they are essentially resigned to spending the rest of their lives in poverty. It's our fault, said Vasiliki Gova, 52, a cleaning woman. She says people were looking for hope and put their hopes on politicians, but no Messiah will come to save us. And there's a fact. I'm not talking about end times Messiah, but you see what you said. There's nobody to save you. Want to get saved? When this thing goes down, it's going to be up to you to save yourself financially. All right? And you need to get started on that saving today. It's not going to do you much good to start working on this after the whole thing blows up in everyone's face. As we told you yesterday, and I've said a time or two before, right now, gold and silver are priced at paper gold and silver prices. people are selling physical gold and silver, the whole system, because there isn't really a physical gold market. People are selling physical gold and silver at paper gold prices. It is an incredible buy. It's like saying, listen, I'll sell you a brand new Cadillac for $50,000 in Monopoly money. Go out and get yourself a Monopoly game. You take the money out of the Monopoly game, you go give the guy 50,000 Monopoly dollars, and they give you a new Cadillac. It's a deal. That's where we are right now with gold and silver. And unfortunately, people don't seem to recognize or believe that, but that's what's really going on. And in my opinion, the day is coming when the Monopoly money will no longer work. And people are going to say, wait a second. Somebody's going to come up and say, look, I'll give you another bailout. I'll give you another stack of Monopoly money. I'll give you another stack of fiat dollars. And people are coming, will come to the point and say, I don't want that anymore. If you want something from me, you're going to have to give me gold or silver. You're going to have to give me a tangible form of wealth that has intrinsic value and doesn't depend on politicians or Federal Reserve or anybody else. The value is set by the free market, not by the government-manipulated market. When we get to that point, I believe you're going to see the price of gold and silver launch. When are we going to get there? I don't know. You know, say it all the time. I can't tell you. But it does not appear to be 10 years from now or 5 years from now or even 3 years from now. We are certainly close to a possible readjustment, a possible reset. We're certainly close to it. I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's got to happen. Debt can't be paid. The debt can't be paid. The government doesn't want to admit that.
Al, I think when we see these record high stock market prices, and you talk about the woman in Greece who said that everyone was looking for hope.
Yep.
And I think in 2008, there was a group of people that were looking for hope. I think in 2016, there's a group of people that were looking for hope. And I think because of the, and I don't believe, and I do believe that hope is misplaced. I hoped too, but yet I'm torn because I understand that some of our problems can't be fixed until other problems are addressed, and we know those other problems are so big. The debt can't be paid. We know that. So the changes will be difficult to come by.
They'll be tragic.
Yes. And the same thing is going to happen to the people here in this country as has happened to Greece.
Yeah, I know.
Only it'll be...
It's going to happen around the world.
Yes.
Maybe to different degrees, perhaps, and not all at once, but just the same. We're all going to get a dose of it before we're done.
So we all look for hope, and then we sit and wait for things to change.
Well,
and what really needs to be changed is us.
I agree.
How
do we change?
We have to change.
How? The woman gave us a clue when she said we were looking for hope. We were trusting in politicians, all right? We were looking for someone else to save us, but she says in this case, there is no Messiah coming to save us. Which means if you're going to be saved, you're going to have to save yourself. You're going to have to take personal responsibility, all right? Which is a term, oh my God, I don't want to take personal responsibility. Are you crazy? Yeah, that's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to realize that the government and all the politicians and all the idiots who are making you promises are not going to be able to save you. If you're going to be saved in the secular world, it's going to be up to you to manufacture or cause that salvation. And one of the things you have to do, you have to save. You could save cool tools. You could save guns. You could save land. You could save a bunch of things, and you can save gold and silver. You can save food. You can do everything. There's a bunch of things you can do, but we're going to be coming to a time when you're going to need savings. And if you've got your savings stored in debt instruments like stocks and bonds and paper dollars and digital dollars, the strong probability is you're going to lose your assets. If you want to get through this, you're going to need some. If you want a currency that can get you through this, doesn't mean you'll live happily ever after. Doesn't mean life will be perfect. But maybe you won't starve. get some gold, get some silver, start stacking coins. And right now, like I say, the prices are so low, they're giving it away. You know, it's one of those things, you know, buy low and sell high. I talked about it yesterday. This is the buy low moment, folks. This is the buy low moment. Get in and grab all you can and then sit and wait. There's going to be a sell high moment at some later time when you're going to be able to get the Cadillac for 1 or 2 ounces of gold. If that's what you want. Or maybe you want a house or some land, or I don't know what you want, but you'll have that buy. If you buy low now, you'll be in a position to sell high later. But if you want to sell high later and make the maximum return on your investment that's possible, you have to start with buying low. It's virtually, you know, it's almost inconceivable that the prices are going to go any lower. But even if they did, all it would be is another even greater buying opportunity. And it really is a spectacular buying opportunity. One of these days, somebody's going to look around and they're going to say, you know, I don't want paper. I want gold. I want silver. I want something tangible. When that happens, your paper is going right down the pipe and the gold and silver will take off like a skyrocket. Which pretty much finishes my presentation for the day.
One of these days, Alice, to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
To the moon.
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, and it's there. But, you know, the lady is right. Nobody's going to save you. Mm-mm. Unless you look to the good Lord. That's another story. I'm not talking about the good Lord. I'm just saying in this secular world, nobody's going to save you. None of the politicians, not Trump, not the Democrats, none of them. Want to get saved from what's coming? Save yourself. That means save, save, save. Real money in a form that can be maintained. We're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.